In the spirit of Pan-Africanism and bringing forward voices from the African diaspora, we were very pleased to be able to extend an invitation to speak tonight to one of the leading sisters in the trade union movement of the Caribbean. Donna Coombs Montrose is an executive committee member of the Oilfield Workers Trade Union in Trinidad and a leading political activist there. Join with me in welcoming her.
Thank you, Brother Abdul. Abdul and I go many years back to the days when we were active in the African Liberation Support Movement. I had an opportunity to live in North America for 11 years. And as a Caribbean woman, as a trade unionist now, I'm very proud of that experience. I lived in Detroit in the belly of the monster, the six of those. And that is where I think I was nurtured in understanding the kind of struggle you have to put up with here in the United States. I remember vividly a march we had in Tupelo, Mississippi against the Klan some years ago, when the Klan was, well, in those days I thought we were killing the Klan. And I come back in 1991 to find that the Klan has been given a rebirth, a new lease on life. And it just tells me that we have to struggle a lot harder in order that victory down the line will be ours. I'm also here to testify to the international influence of Malcolm X, because we in the Caribbean certainly missed a brother when Malcolm was murdered. But first up, I want to bring you greetings from my union, the Oilfield Workers Trade Union, from its executive and members, who sent me up last night. I came in less than 24 hours ago, so I'm still a little jet lagged. We have a membership of 11,000 people. We are 54 years old, and we are the principal union in oil, chemical, electricity, and we are politically very powerful in Trinidad and Tobago. I think Vicky will be glad to hear that. We're very much involved in the struggle. For those of you who may not know, we are just a little black speck of dust on the tip of South America with a population of 1,234,000 people. And my sister here had an opportunity to visit us a couple years ago for an international book fair that we sponsored in an attempt to bring political minds together to look at where the Caribbean is in terms of where the struggle is with our people. The OWTU is also one of the most powerful trade unions in the English-speaking Caribbean. Because of the political consciousness and patriotism it has displayed over the last few decades in defense of the oppressed poor, struggling against apartheid, in solidarity with freedom fighters in Kenya, Ghana, Nicaragua, from the coal mines of Britain to the hinterlands of Guyana, in defense of liberation fighters all over the world, and in opposition to the yoke of oppression that rides the backs of third world people generally. We have an internationalist perspective, and we learned a lot from Malcolm. These were among the major issues around which Malcolm X championed the cause of third world people around the world. His contributions played an important role in influencing the course of direction and the outlook of my union and the people of my young independent nation. We therefore quickly embraced the opportunity to attend this conference because of its significance and because it's dedicated to Malcolm, who is a product, as we feel, of a Caribbean umbilical cord in that his parents were from Grenada, which is a tiny island next to Trinidad of 110,000 people, which was busy about making a revolution a few years ago. You may have known of the US invasion of 110,000 people a few years ago when they intervened on the side of those who were collaborating with them and upstaged the revolution that was taking place in the Caribbean. We view Malcolm as our champion of equality of the poor and oppressed, our revolutionary warrior and our advocate of struggle against apartheid and imperialism. Malcolm's rise to national leadership in the early 1960s was simultaneous with yet another period of tremendous struggle in the Caribbean and Africa, inspired by the black liberation struggles taking place in the United States, especially against racial and economic oppression, and as I mentioned just now, against the Klan in particular. These struggles were directed at Britain, in our instance, a dying colonial power who was forced to surrender some of her Caribbean and African territories in the early 60s, including my Trinidad and Tobago, which gained independence in 1962. In each instance, however, she had already groomed a new local intelligentsia of nationals who were to continue the expansionist policies of the United States, the New World Power, and to a lesser extent, Britain, France, and other European countries. If I could just digress for a moment, it is no accident of history that the major powers of the world, Britain, France, Portugal, and others, had carved us up into hundreds of little pieces of territories of people of color, of different historical experiences. Their master plan was to create hundreds of third world colonies, better enable their world powers, these modern pirates, to exploit our rich natural, mineral, and human resources in Africa, in the Caribbean, and in Latin America. From the first lump of gold snatched by Columbus in the New World on behalf of Spain in 1492, to the last barrel of superior crude oil snatched by Amoco Standard Oil of Indiana in Trinidad and Tobago this afternoon, the policy, indeed the motive of these pirates, has been to exploit, indeed to ravish our resources for profit and for their own gain. Why else would Britain take millions of people from their homes and territories in Africa and dump them halfway around the world, but for the free labor we were forced to provide? Why else would there still be French colonies in the Caribbean in 1991, existing as tropical havens for rich French aristocrats? Some of you may not know that we still have colonies in the Caribbean. The independence struggle is not yet over, and we have to continue that struggle to free Martinique and Guadeloupe and others from the yoke of colonialism. It is important that we understand these issues because Malcolm told us that we have to join our hands across the globe to solve the problems of the world's poor, that any kind of movement for freedom of black people based solely within the confines of America is bound to fail, that a problem should be attacked from all elements of humanity. And that's where we come in. So here we are in Asia, in Africa, in Latin America, and in the Caribbean, with our own nationals installed in high political office and wielding tremendous political power, supervising the abuse and export of our natural resources by General Motors, by Barclays, by Citicorp, by Coca-Cola, by Standard Oil, by Exxon, by Kentucky Fry, by the Rockefellers, by the Mellons, by the DuPonts, and hundreds of other transnationals who have penetrated and indeed do control every sector of third world economies, as our governments have used a dependent path to economic development. They feel they must depend on these multinationals in order to develop our third world countries. Whether it is the Caribbean Basin Initiative, the export processing zones, the industrialization by invitation, these tactics have been used to transform the small nations of the world into suppliers of raw materials for metropolitan markets, or dumping grounds for surplus commodities and toxic waste, or sources of cheap labor, or transshipment points now for the movement of drugs. I'd just like to draw a couple examples of how that operates so you can understand what I'm talking about. The industrialization by invitation scheme. It was a tactic they developed in the early 60s that offered tax incentives and allowed the multinationals to come in under what they call pioneer status with equipment and foreign personnel and technology, duty free, and they set up shop. whether it's extraction or manufacturing processes. And these companies operate, they export our product, and they bank the profits up here, or in Switzerland, or somewhere abroad. Many of these companies have become more powerful than the local lackeys on their payroll, as is the case of Amoco in Trinidad, who enjoy their own independence in our independent country. Some of you may not know that this exists in the Caribbean, where Amoco is stationed. It's almost offshore, and we have to show a pass like in South Africa, you know, too. And then they have separate entrances for those who are upper on their employment level, and the workers go through another gate. And if you don't have the right color pass, you can't go through the right gate and so on. South Africa all over. And Amoco extracts our crude oil, our natural resource, exports 100% to the United States, and simply pays a government tax. And the company also controls the production of natural gas used to generate our electricity and other heavy industry. So Amoco in Trinidad and Tobago has the power to shut us down overnight because electricity generates all industry. And last week, my government, which is facing elections next Monday, signed a new contract to give Amoco a 20-year lease to supply all natural gas in the country. That's the power they have, this invisible government, as we call them. Another form of this exploitation is the export processing zones. These operate as enclaves of mass production for export. They pay the lowest wages in the world, like 14 cents US per day they pay in Korea. And they solicit the labor of women. They attract mainly women, or they appeal mainly to women between 15 and 24. And if you get pregnant, you're fired. And when you get to 24, you're too old, because it's mass production and it is speed. It is a strategy designed to exploit mainly third world women. These zones abound in the third world under the most oppressive conditions and are mainly responsible for factories closing down in California, in New York right here, and in Chicago, only to open up in Mexico, the Philippines, Korea, or Haiti. In Haiti, Reynolds has a factory which produces baseballs. Now, no one in Haiti knows anything about baseballs. Baseball is not a Caribbean sport, because as colonies, we learned cricket and what we call football, or what you call soccer, and other sports. Baseball is not a traditional Caribbean sport, but all of their baseballs are made in Haiti, where they pay $2.64 per day. Okay, that's what they pay for the labor. So it pays them to move from Chicago to Haiti, because they can exploit our women, particularly exploit all of our labor for a much cheaper rate. I'll give you another example of the Dominican Republic, where they also export processing zones, and how much this has helped development. Unemployment in the Dominican Republic remains at over 50%, and the illiteracy rate is 80%. Okay, 6% of the population owns 40% of all the wealth, and the foreign companies own the rest. In 1991, the schemes have become more sophisticated. Malcolm warned us in a speech at the London School of Economics in February 1965 that America, the new colonial power, the neo-colonial power, or neo-imperialist power, would come up with a new approach. Malcolm called it benevolent colonialism, or philanthropic imperialism, humanitarianism, or dollarism. And he said, whereas we could fight against colonialism, we find it difficult to fight against dollarism and to condemn dollarism, because we're so busy chasing the dollar, we don't realize in the long run what is happening to our people. But even Malcolm X may not have realized the extent to which international capital would transform our rum and calypso colonies into large industrial zones with an unlimited urban workplace for international assembly manufacturing. Under special tariffs and export arrangements, these transnationals internationalize our production, thereby reducing assembly costs. For example, Manhattan Industries may send its raw material uncut to the Dominican Republic for cutting. Then they send it to Haiti for stitching. And then the shirts are returned to the U.S. to put on the label. So you buy a shirt with a U.S. label, and you don't know that the pockets were stitched in the Dominican Republic, and the sleeves were stitched in Haiti, you know, and a different part, the colors were stitched somewhere else, wherever it's cheapest for them to do the operation. So you could find a factory worker stitching colors for 10 years and still can't make a whole shirt, because that is how they have globalized production now. They're either categorized as Caribbean exports under the Caribbean Basin Initiative program I mentioned just now, or the 809 program, or they have all of these sophisticated programs that they slot us under in order to escape taxes, the American taxes. There's a whole host of these forms of international production which mainly exploit of women with the blessings of the host government by setting wages so low and offering tremendous incentives for export industrialization. Yes, Malcolm, we do have to understand this dollarism of these imperial powers who exploit all of our women in Chicago, in the sweatshops of New York, in California, or in Haiti by transforming us into one big global assembly line of cheap or free labor. It is important, I feel, that we understand this process clearly so that we can join hands across our oceans to fight the super exploitation of all our people. On the one hand, thousands of jobs have been lost to you in North America through the use of modern technology methods of production. But we should be informed that our tropical paradises remain among the poorest in the world. Let me draw an example of Haiti, which set an example in the world and had the first revolution of slaves in 1789. Some of us may not know that. Haiti set the mark for us in the Caribbean as slave territories in 1789 and had the first revolt of slaves, a successful revolt that set Haiti on the course as an independent country. But where is Haiti today? In the Western Hemisphere, two of the six poorest nations are in the Caribbean, and Haiti is number one. The most destitute place in the world, where some of you may have read in the news recently of activities there where people are just fleeing the country because of the coup. Their harsh economic measures and debt traps have reduced some of us to the lowest levels of health, education, and social services. Abandoned children, for example, have been accepted as a permanent feature of Brazil's development. We have largely remained banana republics that produce the same commodities that we did as colonies. We still produce what we do not consume and consume what we do not produce. What do I mean by that? Our basic consumption needs of food, clothing, and shelter are met by imports controlled by U.S. companies, for which we pay to them more than the foreign exchange we own. So the debt burden has been constantly increasing in that we owe them more and more. And I'll just give you an example of that. In 1976, Caribbean nations suffered a trade deficit of $3.5 billion. That is how much we have consumed that we haven't been able to pay for. In 1982, that trade deficit had doubled to $8.7 billion. I don't think any of us could count that money in a lifetime. So we may not be able to conceive of how much that is that we owe for what we have consumed that we have not produced and what we are yet to pay for. So this debt that we owe to mainly the United States has been increasing every year. And it's more if you look in 1992, it will be more than 1991. I just don't want us to get away with the fact that the jobs that have left here and have flown to the Caribbean have resulted in any development of any kind for our people. So while development has stagnated, this debt accumulated by our third world countries has grown to tremendous proportions. Let me draw another example. According to World Bank reports, 19 Latin American countries alone owe $370 billion. That was 1985 figures. They probably owe more by now. And it was at $23 billion in 1970. So we can see in the space of 15 years how much they have accumulated debt in Latin America. The debt crisis for our small fledgling nations is orchestrated principally by the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, who in collaboration with our government's officials impose harsh measures of structural adjustment on our already burdened economies. In the case of Trinidad and Tobago, our new government signed a contract with the IMF in 1988, and this has already resulted in widespread layoffs, closure or sale of our state-owned companies, which we fought for in 1970. Excuse me. They have devalued our currency, and they have also increased the cost of utilities and food by over 300%. And they forced public servants to retire earlier. They've also imposed a value-added tax and other new taxes on our people. The VAT alone is 15%. In order to create a more favorable environment for foreign investment, they've also changed the law to allow foreign investors to own our land now. So you can come down with a few dollars and buy some Caribbean property, whereas that didn't exist before. These are measures that the International Monetary Fund forced the government to impose on us. The spiral social effects of these structural adjustment measures have meant more starvation for the poor, increases in the cost of health, education, malnutrition, suicide, and more bad people, whom we call vagrants in Trinidad and Tobago, more abandoned children. So we can see the spiral effect of some of these economic policies on our Caribbean islands. And the brunt of this crisis is borne mainly by our women. As the economic crisis worsens, many have joined the exodus to the metropolitan countries in search of employment in this global assembly village, where before we had an estimated 25% of our population living in North America, because people migrate in search of better jobs. There has been a rapid exodus over the last few years to add to that 25%. As our own economic crisis worsens, the metropolitan countries are turning off this escape valve for the Caribbean, causing greater unemployment, which is impacting on our youth. But the dictates of imperialist penetration, which has created thousands of divisions of labor, which socializes us for its own convenience, can perhaps work in our favor. We can perhaps ignore all of their attempts to control us culturally through Turner's CNN and CBS and all of the imported and packaged media that we get in the Caribbean. We get very little of our own material. We get more Caribbean music in New York than we get in the Caribbean. That's the crisis we're in culturally. We can combine our sporadic forms of people's resistance to oppression. We can ignore the Central Intelligence Agency's destabilizing activity in our region. They have sought to penetrate us in the labor movement, in the media, all over the place. They have a branch of the CIA. And one of the criticisms they made of Grenada is that Carter had pulled out the CIA, so that the explosion in Grenada in 1983 took them by surprise, because they didn't have an active CIA branch in Grenada at the time. They're all over the Caribbean. And what is their purpose? They're there to attempt to stifle any struggle as much as they could of the people. But we're fighting. We can neutralize the impact of 10,580 military personnel stationed at military installations in the Caribbean for the purpose of stifling this struggle on this resistance to foreign domination, provided that we embrace the message of Malcolm X And what did Malcolm say? We, you, have an obligation to the lost brother who went astray and found himself today in a foreign land. You are obligated, Malcolm says. And just as you see the oppressed people all over the world getting together, today getting together, the black people in the West Indies are also seeing that they are oppressed. Instead of just calling themselves an oppressed minority in the States, they are part of the oppressed masses of the people all over the world today. We are crying out for action against the common oppressor. In the 1990s, as we quickly lose our reputation for carnival and tranquility, as our Caribbean governments hang on to the transnationals to solve the problems of development, as they become more desperate because of their inability to provide solutions to the problems of unemployment, particularly for our restless youth, we expect that more urban violence and repression will be the order of the day. We want you to raise your voices in solidarity with our struggle, both among Caribbean Americans in diaspora and against any military or other intervention that seeks to stifle our voices of protest. And I think Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz will look down on all of us with pride, because we dare to struggle and we will dare to win. Thank you.